Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and isn't this a fantastic headline out of Michigan Advance, which I'm seeing on my screen right at this moment? It says, "Warm winters, a wet blanket for small ski slopes in northern Michigan." Now, here's part of what Izzy Ross's story says, and I quote, "In a place where businesses depend on snow and cold temperatures, this weather has been tough. Iconic sled races like the UP 200 and the Tequamaman County Sled Dog Race have been canceled, and the state shut down ice fishing for sturgeon on Black Lake. Warmer winters have prevented Mount Holly in Traverse City from fully operating over Christmas break for 5 out of the last 6 years due to poor snow conditions. It used to be a big moneymaker. This year, Traverse City saw a Christmas Day high of 58 degrees, tying it with a record high set in 1982. The western part of the Upper Peninsula saw its warmest December since the National Weather Service started keeping records over a century ago." No. I'm sure everything is just great. Let's just keep going the way we've been going. No need to reverse climate change and the warming of the earth. Don't look up. Really, don't look up. No, seriously, watch that movie if you haven't yet. And Donald Trump doesn't seem to care. He says his major energy policy is...
"Two things I'm going to do. Number one is drill, baby, drill. And the other thing, equal.
First, how pathetic for Trump to have to resort to parroting a line that Sarah Palin used in the 2008 campaign. That's very, very, very low energy for dear leader. Second, of course he wants to appease the oil and gas industry. They love him, and he protects them by stripping away environmental protections, not to mention lavished tax breaks. And that's why the laws that Michigan Democrats passed last year, helping us reach a 100% clean energy standard in 16 years, is important. The marketplace is already there. You know, it's already there around the world. We'll create new jobs here, which will help keep and bring new talent to the state. And it'll help slow down the damage that we've done to our environment. Is it a perfect law? Nope. Work needs to be done. More work needs to be done, especially on the environmental justice front for low-income Michiganders. But it's a start. Thanks for all the feedback I received from some of you, both at leftoflansing@gmail.com and also on Twitter or X or Facebook or on Instagram. On last week's episode featuring Montcalm farmer Dick Farnsworth. Now, Mr. Farnsworth supports the law Michigan Democrats passed last year and will become law later on in November, which stops extreme local governments from blocking farmers like Farnsworth to lease his land for large wind and solar energy projects. This not only helps Michigan reach its clean energy goals, but it gives farmers a chance to keep the land in their family. And someone contacted me on social media this week and brought up an excellent, excellent point. They said, this is no different than farmers leasing their land for cell towers. I mean, that's so true. How many local governments block those kinds of projects? Why aren't they controversial? How many people complain at the ugliness of such towers and how they just ruin the landscape? Democrats demonstrated how they are helping farmers, helping move Michigan into the next generation of energy generation, and they're trying to reverse the damage fossil fuel generation has caused. But by all means, let's enjoy what's happening next week in the UP when temperatures reach 60 degrees in February. That seems really normal. I feel like that meme, you know, where the dog, that cartoon dog, is drinking coffee while his house is on fire all around him, and he says, "Everything is fine." Speaking of the UP, there's a major story happening in Delta County, which is where Escanaba is located. As we've seen in some other counties lately, the right wing grabbed hold of the county commission and is firing county officials for no reason so they can install their kind of people, and they're doing it at a cost to the people of Delta County. Well, many are refusing to sit back and let that happen. Thanks to some networking, grassroots organizing, and good old-fashioned hard work, three of those commissioners are facing recall elections this coming May. And one of those challengers, Kelly Van Genhoven, will join me in just a few moments to give us some background of what's happening there, why she's running, and why it's so vital to know what's happening in your own backyard. I will also ask Ms. Van Genhoven what progressives and the Democratic Party can do to make a dent and connect with voters in parts of the UP which have turned pretty red. We can't just pay attention to the lower third of the state and pockets of the northern LP. We have to fight everywhere, which is why I've talked with activists from across the state. We can't cede ground to the extremism that's dominating the Michigan Republican Party and the National Republican Party. Because you know why? Here's what's coming down the line for everyone, especially women, if Republicans gain control next year. Listen.
I hear from a great many young women who were put on the pill at the age of 14 and came off it, so maybe 10 years later, and realized they've done a complete personality flip. And actually, they, you know, I was, you know, one said, and I thought I was bipolar. But then it turned out actually it was just this psychoactive substance that I'd been, what were they doing to me? And this is all, and this was all to the purpose of rendering a woman receptive to what is, for the most part, loveless and sometimes extremely degrading sexual access. And I struggle to see in what way that's in women's interests. And given the great many other things that, to my eye, are downstream of the entry into that paradigm, it seems to me that a good place to start would be a feminist movement against the pill and for rewilding sex, returning the danger to sex, returning the intimacy, and really the consequentiality to sex. And a great deal follows from an intentional reconnection of women's opting intentionally to reconnect with the fullness of our embodied nature.
That was from the highly influential so-called conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation. The Heritage Foundation. And what you heard there was a lady saying that we need to force on women the consequentiality of sex. The consequentiality of sex? I mean, that would make for one hell of a bumper sticker, would it not? Please, right-wingers, please fight for that. Please display it. I would love to see it. Like Michigan Advance's Susan Demas tweeted, "Hello, fellow youngs. Do you want to vote for the party crusading against fun in any form?" I mean, rallying against recreational sex? It's a bold strategy. Let's see how it turns out for them. And this was always the end game. This was always the end game for them, everyone. You knew Christian nationalists who refused to follow in the words of Jesus were never stopping at overturning Roe. They were going to go after contraception. And as we've seen in Alabama, right-wing judges down there declared that frozen embryos are human beings. Frozen embryos. That's leading to Alabama hospitals having to stop in vitro fertilization treatments. What are we doing here? And the supposed moderate choice to Donald Trump, Nikki Haley, said in an interview this week that to her, embryos are babies. This is all about controlling women. It's all about controlling their freedoms to choose when or when not to be pregnant and controlling their sexual freedoms. Trust me, people get off on that. I mean, at least we're not living under the Taliban. Wait, we're not, right? New York professor Ruth Bengate, who I would love to have here on the podcast someday, tweeted, "Fascist in every way." Very true. The right wing is showing us what they're all about, and they want to spread their extreme and weird Christian nationalism all across the country. We've been able to set up a temporary roadblock to this type of fascism here in Michigan by expanding abortion rights to women in the state. We sort of just want to treat women like they're adults who have the ability to choose what they want to do medically and economically. I know, how extreme. Michigan Democrats have done some good. They really have, thanks to some strong progressive policies, which also includes repealing the anti-worker right-to-work law, which ended last week. John Nichols from The Nation magazine this week covered this major victory for workers in Michigan, but I'd like to read the money line, or the final paragraph of the story, in which he quotes former Clinton Labor Secretary Robert Reich. And Robert said, "Michigan Democrats took full control of the state government for the first time in 40 years. They used that power to repeal the state's right to work law. And this is why we have to show up for our state and local elections." Hear, hear. Robert, you nailed it. This is why we have to show up for our state and local elections. And to help illustrate that point further, Kelly Van Genhoven will join me here to explain how she and the people in Delta County are working hard to reverse the extremism that took over the county government. You're listening to LOL.
A podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? Leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
That's right. Special thanks to my good friend Rich for the sweat that he put into getting leftoflansing.com off the ground. That's where you can read my weekly musings and listen to the Left of Lansing shorts that I post every Friday. And of course, just like wherever you get your podcasts, we also provide an archive of all previous episodes. That's leftoflansing.com. Well, you've heard me say on here many, many times that while national politics are indeed important and we can't allow, you know, another 4 years of Donald Trump in the White House, and it may be longer than that because he might never leave if he gets in. And, you know, I'm serious about that. But I also say that whatever happens on the state level and on the local level is always just as important, if not more important, because as we've seen through the years, change in Washington, D.C. can be slow, can be tedious, but not so much on the state and local side. And that's why I started this podcast. I wanted to highlight those fighting for the common good inside the state of Michigan, whether it be on the activist side or someone running for state office, statewide office, or someone running for their school boards or city and county commissions. The right wing, in my opinion, has been better equipped and financed through many years on fighting on the local level. But that's starting to change in various places around Michigan, as I've highlighted here with counties like Ottawa and Livingston. Well, there are people in an Upper Peninsula county that are refusing to let apathy and resignation win while extremism takes hold in their county. In fact, due to some real grassroots organizing, they've been able to get a recall election scheduled for this May against three county commissioners who've used the similar brand of tactics that we've discussed here that we've seen in Ottawa County, for instance. And one of these people who's facing off to replace one of these Delta County commissioners is Kelly Van Genhoven. She's hoping to unseat Delta County Chair David Moyle this May, and she's also helped organize and co-founded a group called Delta County Citizens for Ethical Leadership, which formed shortly after these commissioners took the majority in 2022. And joining me to talk more about her efforts and the efforts of many others is Kelly Van Genhoven. Thank you so much for being on Left of Lansing this week, Kelly.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I wanted to thank you for being on and sharing your story on what's happening in Delta County. But first, for those who may not be completely familiar with Delta County, would you mind talking just a little bit about it? Because I believe you've lived there most of your life, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, I've been born and raised in Delta County. I own a local business here in Delta County, and I love our county. We sit on the shore of Lake Michigan. We have the longest shoreline of any county in the Upper Peninsula, and we are in the midst of a great change politically, we hope, in the future.
All right, so let's start from the very beginning then, because in November 2022, these commissioners, they took over the majority of the Delta County Board of Commissioners, and one of them defeated you. First, did you know, Kelly, did you know that, and others out there, did you guys know that trouble was brewing when they were able to take control of the county commission? I mean, did you know that even right after they won the election?
Yeah, we did. At the local level, you could see things sort of going downhill. And when the three commissioners won the office, their seats, they immediately started their work before even being sworn in to make changes within our county administration. And they decided that it was in their best interest to fire our beloved county administrator, who had been a great administrator for 3 years. And it was the third meeting after they were sworn in that they voted on a 3-2 vote to fire our administrator, but we knew things were brewing during our visits and tours of the county that I had with the administrator, with the airport manager, with the sheriff's department, through various different conversations. We knew that if this board flipped, that there would be repercussions for that. And unfortunately, that did happen. And a lot of people didn't pay attention until they fired our administrator. And then they were like, whoa, what happened? And a lot of people got involved.
Did these commissioners give any reasons why they wanted to get rid of County Administrator Emily DeSalvo? Did they ever say why? Is this something they campaigned on?
So prior to the election, two out of the three commissioners had given our administrator exceedingly low marks on her public review. She asked for her administrator review to be made public and in the open because she wanted everyone to know what type of job she was doing. She was very transparent, open, honest about her role as administrator. She knew the job inside and out. She had a long-standing history with our courts before she became our administrator. She was very well respected within the courthouse and the county building. And when her annual review came up, they gave her a 60%, a 70%. And then the other three commissioners at that time, the other three commissioners had the majority. They gave her high marks of 100, 91, 93. And so when she asked why the two commissioners gave her those exceedingly low marks, she was met with silence. She asked them in public. She asked them in private via email, text message. Can we have a meeting? I just want an explanation on why these scores were so low. And they refused to give her answers. Then when in November, both of those commissioners won re-election along with a third, and that person who won the third seat was the flip that made the deciding vote to terminate her in February.
I just asked if they gave reasons because, you know, for example, when I talked about Ottawa County politics with activist Joe Spaulding last year, and he was talking about the right-wing Ottawa impact majority on that county commission, it was obvious that they were going after the health administrator, for instance, because they never liked the way that the administrator handled state COVID policies. So they always were declaring outright war on her. Did these three commissioners in Delta County ever, did they say, other than saying we're giving you low marks, did they ever give any indications? Did they ever say, oh, we didn't like how you did this or we didn't like how you did that?
It was the grades they gave her. And then after the third commissioner won his seat, he started asking questions regarding her contract, whether she was part of a union, you know, those type of things. And then she finally came out and said, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you asking me these questions? And he said, well, we just want to know in case you were to, you know, be hit by a car. And she didn't even know how to respond to that. And so she kind of knew the writing was on the wall. She knew that her termination was coming, but she didn't precisely know when. So she actually got up at a county commission board meeting and gave a long statement, which can be viewed on YouTube, about their behavior towards her and their behavior as commissioners, and called them unethical, said that they were doing things that were inappropriate, asking her things to do things that were inappropriate, or asking her not to do things that were part of her job. And so after she gave that statement and gave suggestions on how they could come to sort of an agreement on how to move forward, they voted to terminate her.
Who then filled into her place? Who was the interim county administrator? Who did they appoint?
Yep. So what they did was Ms. DeSalvo was terminated on February 7th. And then on February 14th, they held a special meeting. The commission held a special meeting where they appointed our county controller at the time as our interim administrator. And we found that sort of interesting because during the conversation on February 15th at this special meeting, all the commissioners were sort of throwing out names, but it almost seemed like they had already picked someone because the prior day at an airport advisory board meeting, she came in with one of the commissioners and the commissioner said, oh, Miss Young is going to be here for whatever we may need her for. She's going to keep the wheels on the bus. She's going to, you know, help us through until we hire someone. And she said, yep, I'm here for whatever you need. And then the following day, they had this special meeting with the county board and they're all throwing names out there. Well, They had just said the day prior at an airport board meeting that this was going to be the person. And then when they voted to hire Ms. Young as our interim administrator, she got up and gave a speech, introduced herself. And we're all sitting in the audience going, wait a minute, this was all planned. Like, there would have been no discussion. So the two commissioners who were in the minority had come forward with their ideas for who would be a great interim administrator. And they were completely shut down because the three had already presumably picked Ms. Young as our interim administrator. And they went on to subsequently hire her as our administrator when we had five very qualified applicants who all had more experience and more education in public administration than she did. They actually went on for months to change the job description of our administrator to fit the qualifications that the interim had so then they could hire our interim administrator as our permanent administrator. And that's where she stands right now.
Kelly, do you know why that was the person they wanted to go with? What are your feelings on it?
I don't know for fact. I know that they had changed the administrator's job description to be administrator controller, and they had forced the hand that they needed someone who was going to be hardcore in finance, who was a numbers hawk, one of them said, who, you know, was from Delta County, who knew the county because she had already been in the county building for a number of years as our controller. So they were basically trying to combine two jobs into one. And so now she is our administrator slash controller, which I think she's been doing a fair job. I think that she's very overwhelmed because she doesn't know her job. And the amount of stipend that she was given as our interim administrator was $648 per day. So she was actually at a certain time making more than some of our highest state officials. And we could not figure out why they were paying her so much. So within one vote, you know, of terminating our administrator, we had to pay out $50,000 in severance. Then we paid $46,000 to our interim administrator as a stipend. And then because she didn't know her job, we had to hire someone to train her to do her job, which cost us $8,300. And so within one vote, we were out $100,000 in our county. And we're relatively, a smaller county. So that is a huge chunk of change for us. And they just had no problem spending it. And they all ran as fiscal conservatives. So to run as a fiscal conservative and then cost the county so much money just made no sense to us.
Yeah, I was going to say so much for fiscal responsibility.
Right. Yeah.
So is this then why you and a couple others decided to start Delta County Citizen for Ethical Leadership? And maybe you could talk about that and, you know, some of the goals that you really wanted to achieve at first with this group.
Right. A lot of times when things like this happen, when, you know, you have these unannounced firings and they have no merit or base for them whatsoever, people get angry and people don't understand. We had a lot of people who weren't paying attention to anything that went on in the county before Emily DeSalvo was fired. And I would sit at those board meetings, those county commission meetings, and maybe have four or five people in the audience, maybe. And we had these nice tables and these big comfy chairs. And then all of a sudden, as soon as she was fired, it hit the newspaper, it hit the new, you know, the local news. And then our board meetings were jam-packed with people. And everybody wanted to do something, but they didn't know what to do. So my friend Christiana Reynolds and I, along with Steve Benoit, created the Delta County Citizens for Ethical Leadership. We're like, we need a place where people can go and vent their anger and vent their frustration, but then also find a place where we can use people with their assets and their resources to try and come up with an idea of what can we do now to try and fix this? You know, we called for her termination to be revoked. We called for explanations. You know, we called for many different things and we never got any answers. And so we're like, okay, we need to form. So we just formed a Facebook page and we put it out there. We're all great networkers. We all knew a lot of people. Everybody knows everybody in this area. And within a month, we had over 800 members, many of them very active, who wanted to recall. And the call for recall on these commissioners was at a two-day protest that was held outside our county building regarding Ms. DeSalvo's firing. So definitely the formation of the Facebook page really, really helped take the recall effort off. It was a good thing.
When was it decided that recall would be the strategy, and you know what all went into recalling these commissioners? Because from my understanding, it's not a real easy task.
It is not. So in our group, we had legal, we had community activists that were very good at networking with other community organizations. I had posted on my commission page, because I never took down my commission page after I lost the election. I had posted that we were looking for a potential recall and I needed help. And a lady named Joanne Galloway reached out to me. She said that she worked for an organization called Center for Change Northern Michigan. They were a bipartisan group and they didn't do recalls themselves, but they could help me network with other counties who had successfully recalled their commissions. And so that's where the group sort of formed together, where we're like, okay, now we need to reach out to other counties to see how they've done it. And that worked really well. And so we took our assets that we had within our own committee with legal, with people who wanted to step up to turn in the petition, you know, to actually call for the recall. And then we had a lot of people who did boots on the ground to sign those petitions, get those petition signatures.
And again, though, I mean, you've said this already, networking, and that was the key to even get all this going here.
Exactly. Social media really helps with that, obviously. And but the main formation of our group came from our Facebook page and the protests that were held. So actually, you know, people just wanting to help.
You've decided to run again here for this recall effort. There are two other people running for those two other seats being recalled as well. But first, maybe you can tell us about why you decided to want to get back into this. Again, you ran and you fell short in 2022, but here you are again back in 2023 with this recall effort trying to win the seat again. Why did you decide to go for it again?
It was twofold, really. In 2022, we, in my district, District 4, had three candidates. We had a Republican, a Democrat, and a no party. And I was the no party candidate because I entered the race late, because I felt that the Democrat candidate and the Republican candidate were not up to snuff, quote unquote. And I thought I could do it. And during my election, what I did was try to focus on teaching people how to vote no party or how to vote independent. And in a straight party ticket state, that is almost impossible. And so the straight party ticket killed my chances. Our Democratic candidate actually bowed out of the election in May, but we got her name off the ballot. So over 600 people in my district voted for a Democrat that wasn't running. And so that's why I lost. So the person that won, David Moyle, only garnered 43% of the vote. He's the only commissioner who didn't get the 50% or more to sit on the board. And then the board elected him as board chair. And you would think that you would want someone that was highly liked in their district and highly liked in the community to be your board chair, to be the voice of your board. And that didn't happen. The second reason that I wanted to run was that I love my community. And what I thought and what I had seen was that the person that I'm running against never showed up to meetings, was very unreachable. He works out of town. He's only in town a few days a week. And I thought there's got to be more. And what I learned through this recall process was, you know, everybody wanted to sign the petitions. They had no idea what district they lived in. They had no idea who their county commissioner was. And I'm like, well, did you vote in the last election? We had open and honest conversations with a lot of the people who signed these petitions, because they came to us. 75% of the petition signatures we garnered from each of the districts were people coming to us at events. It was not us going to them. I mean, they really wanted to sign these petitions. And they were like, we're so sorry that we weren't paying attention. We're so sorry that we don't know what district we're living in. And I'm like, it's okay, because now you do know. Now you can pay attention. So what I thought I was doing with the last election and teaching people to vote no party or independent, I should have been teaching them what district they live in and who their commissioner is, because I think that would have made a big difference. And so the recall petition process was great, and it was also an educational tool for our community.
That is awesome. Really, it is. What about the other two that are running for seats?
So I decided to run this time as a Democrat because I am a Democrat. I've always been a Democrat.
Okay.
But the other two people that are running no party affiliate, because right now in Delta County, we have I almost want to call it an epidemic of hateful partisan politics rhetoric right now. And, you know, I've been called a socialist, a libtard, a communist. I run a cupcake shop here in Escanaba, and I've been called commie cupcake. Just all of these things that are so untrue and so wild and thrown out there by the opposition. And they are extremely, extremely right wing. Our recall effort is completely bipartisan. We have Democrats, we have Republicans, we have people who've never even identified as either in this effort altogether. It makes me nervous to see the hatefulness that goes on social media and in the press and on the radio. My name was mentioned 3 times on the radio today by a county commissioner that I'm not even running against, but he's just obsessed with the fact that I'm a leader of this group and he can't handle it. I just told him I'm not going to be quiet. So he doesn't like that.
Well, and you know why though? I bet you I know why exactly. It's because not only are you effective at your messaging and they're seeing how effective you are at your networking, but they fear you because you have a message, an effective message. And it's basically what it sounds like to me too, Kelly, is that you're just pushing a message saying that you just want some common sense and some effectiveness back in your government.
Exactly. My campaign slogan is Delta County deserves better. Let me be your better. I truly believe that Delta County is in a state of potential greatness. What I've seen in the last year with this county commission is they are constantly creating chaos, self-induced chaos. And then they're saying, oh, well, we can't get anything done, or we would have been able to get way more done in this last year had it not been for the recall. But us recalling them has nothing to do with what business they can get done, what projects they can get done, what improvements they can get done. We are just trying to oust them, but they have turned it into such a hateful rhetoric that they say we cause disturbances and we cause distractions and we cause all of these problems at commission meetings. And our board chair changed decorum for meetings, saying now that we cannot clap at meetings. If someone gives a comment or if a department head goes up to give an update, or, you know, one of the commissioners says something that goes over well, we're not allowed to clap. If we clap, we're going to get thrown out because we are stopping the work of the people if we clap. And someone actually stood up and said, you cannot stop me from clapping. This is not stopping the work of the people. And he was thrown out of a meeting. So they use that against us anytime they can. And we're just not going to stop.
We're just about out of time here, and thank you so much for being on. I'd like to ask you this question. I know that you can't speak for everyone, obviously, who lives in Delta County or in the UP, of course, but I'm going to ask you the same question that I've asked other Democrats or progressives or members of the Democratic Party, whatever, who live in a more rural or a red district or a county like my county in the central Michigan area of Gratiot County. So how do you think Democrats or progressives could make some inroads in your area again? I mean, there was a time, I believe, a Democrat served as a United States congressman up there for many, many years. It's been a while, but
yes.
that happened.
Yes.
I think that was Bart Stupak, right?
Yes, he's actually my mentor. I love Bart Stupak. Yes, we are very close. And I believe that we can be like that again. I believe we're on the precipice of something really great. Marquette County up by Lake Superior, they are blue. They are Democrat. And I want that to come down to Delta County again. I think that for a long time, especially during the Trump years, Democrats were afraid. And we were afraid to do things. We were afraid to be out in our community. And now that's starting to go away. Now we're seeing more vocal people stepping up. We're seeing what our state leadership has done with excellent leadership from Whitmer and Gilchrist and Benson and Nessel and everybody in between. And I think that it takes time. You have to have the consistency. And we're trying to make these inroads in Delta County again by getting involved in our community, by being leaders, by volunteering for different organizations. It starts at the bottom and it works its way up. I go into the schools and I educate these kids on, yes, I'm a Democrat and here's my best friend and he's a Republican. And yes, we can debate about things, but we can still be friends afterwards. It doesn't have to be this hateful rhetoric. I think that that's where it starts. It starts from the ground up. But I just want people to know that if you are unsatisfied with your leadership, you can recall. It can happen. It takes a long time. We started this in February, of 2023. We're finally on the ballot for May 2024. And we're hoping that with this commission flip, it'll be the start of something really great.
All right. Well, we will keep our eye on those recall races happening in Delta County in May. Kelly, I wish you and I wish everybody up there who are working to make Delta County a better and more welcoming place to live, I wish all of you good luck. And I would just like to thank you, Kelly, for all the work that you're doing and to just keep fighting for the common good, but more important, for fighting for what's right. And you seem like a very, very decent person. And I think that's maybe something that you are demonstrating that we desperately need here in the state of Michigan. Because like you said, all of this division, this is the most divisive we have been in quite some time. And you're just somebody who's trying to just find solutions, trying to make government work for the people. So we'll keep an eye out on what's happening with you. And I would love to have you on again sometime in the future, if you don't mind.
That would be amazing. Thank you.
It's progressivism with passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
You know, Kelly brought up some important points during our talk there, and I'd like to continue to highlight some of those points as part of my Left of Lansing last call. As she said, this recall effort, which isn't easy, all started because of networking. As I pointed out here many times, and so have many guests and activists like the aforementioned Casey Helton in Livingston County, or Joe Spaulding in Ottawa County, or Jade Gray from Progress Michigan, or Gina Keller from Distill Social, or Danielle Atkinson from Mothering Justice, or Ashley Fennessy from Planned Parenthood, and many, many others who've been here on this podcast, networking is the best weapon that we progressives have in getting our messages out to everyone and in helping everyone organize. That's one of the reasons why I set up this podcast. You see, once you're able to coordinate with people who have the same values and passion to change your community for the better, then we're off to a great start. For a long time, especially on the local level, I think the right wing beat up the Democratic Party and beat up progressives when it came to networking on a local level. I always thought that Democrats got so fired up for presidential races, but not so much for other elections, elections which are just as consequential as presidential elections. We witnessed how crucial off-year elections can be when Republicans wiped out the Democrats across the country and here in Michigan in 2010. They not only controlled the trifecta of government in the state, but they drew their own rigged districts, ensuring they'd stay in power for almost a decade. And they grabbed control of local governments, too. And despite some awesome activism in ending those rigged districts and getting Democrats to control the state government trifecta and a stronger and more effective state Democratic Party apparatus, the right wing fought to take over local governments and school boards in 2022. But I think with the extreme right-wing Moms for Liberty book-burning fanaticism and fascism and the extreme corruptness that we're seeing with right-wing leadership in these local governments, people are taking notice. Oh, yes, people are taking notice and learning of the importance to pay attention to what's happening in their own backyards. The passion and the commitment that people like Kelly Van Ginhoven and others are showing in Delta County is a story that must be followed and a story that must be celebrated. The people there are simply asking for sanity, for someone to work for the people, to work for the working people. They want decency, not corruption, not a government that acts as a financial revolving door for people in power. They want solutions because in the end, they just want a functioning government, a government that represents them. They want someone to serve in their county commission or city commission or school board who just represents them and isn't there to create a spotlight for themselves. And to the state Democratic Party, you guys have made some significant strides across the state during the last 6 years, no doubt about it. But let's not forget about places like Delta County. Let's not forget about challenging for everyone's votes. Because as we've seen with people like Kelly, we've got some good people fighting for what is right in red counties and doing the grunt work to set up a resistance to the kind of right-wing extremism, Trumpism, that is dominating the Republican brand across the state. And I don't see that changing anytime soon, do you? I have provided a link to help you donate to Kelly Van Gerhoven's recall effort against that extreme Delta County commissioner. You'll find it on leftoflansing.com and also wherever you listen to the show, because every little bit helps. Like I said during the interview, Kelly is being attacked ferociously by her opponents because they fear her power to organize, to network, to pull people together for the common good, and because she fights for people. Something Republicans don't do anymore. Did they ever?
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Remember to vote on this week's Twitter poll. Do you think Governor Gretchen Whitmer's popularity is enough to get Joe Biden a victory in Michigan this November? I'll keep that poll posted until Tuesday night, and thanks to everyone who voted last week. Let me once more give a special thanks to Kelly Van Ginhoven on being my guest this week. Remember, you can always contact me during the week. That's leftoflansing.com if you have any comments about the show. And please let me know if there are some guests you think I should bring on the show. And please subscribe to the podcast. And don't forget to give it a great 5-star review. And you know what? This recent warm weather, as the sun is beginning to stick around a little longer here in Michigan, along with the Detroit Tigers playing their first spring training game this weekend, that really does mean spring is just around the corner, and it'll really feel like spring if the Michigan State Spartans make it to March Madness. So, Tom, let's get it together there in East Lansing. Until next week, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.